This is an eavesdropping conversation. I am Juliet Fraser, and today I'm talking to Christine Abdelnour. Welcome, Chris. It's so nice to see you.
Hi, Juliet. I'm very happy too.
We've waited a long time for this moment, haven't we?
Yes, since summer, actually.
Yeah, that's right. So I like to start by asking artists to describe themselves in their own words as who they are as a musician.
I am what we call the free improviser musician, but I don't really like this word of improvisation, because free improvisation usually is defined as something created in the moment without any preparation. And my angle of approach is to see improvisation more like free composition. For me, it's an act of intelligence. I'm not just a body that feels the music, but my brain is also very active in the process. I see improvisation as a language with some codes and some strategies. And usually when I play, for example, I ask questions to myself, but very in a fast way, like how a sound will emerge, why I'm doing this sound now, how this sound will change everything in the music, how I will go in the music, how I will go out. What interests me in improvised music is usually how the music moves, the laws of displacement in the music, and why suddenly the music will work and why it's not working sometimes. So I'm very interested since a few years about the shape in the music. How do you build a shape in the improvised music?
Mm.
How there is transitions, how you build the transitions, and how you build a musical dramaturgy.
Mm-hmm.
I've tried to name all the parameters that are involved in my music, and sometimes it's very taboo to do that in music, to talk about shape and parameters, but for me it was very interesting to do that and to explain the musical causality in my music. So this is my general point of view of about improvisation.
Mm.
But of course, when I focus on sound, I prefer to call myself a plastic sound artist, actually, a plastic, like sound was a plastic material. But I'm not sure also about this word, like sound artist, because, like I said, it's the shape and also the sound. My main focus also is sound, of course, like a plastic material, because sound for me is very tactile and has its own energy inside the sound. So what interests me, of course, is also the exploration of the internal content in every sound, and developing this hypersensitivity to sound vibration and resonance. So it's very also related to my body, of course, not just the brain. And it's all these tiny perceptions and this space of sensoriality that is very interesting for me, how music can be very magic and can stretch time. And then when the time is stretched, it allows the development of the material and the sound and the materiality of sound.
Can you take us back a bit to where this started for you? So, in fact, you haven't yet mentioned your instrument, though you are talking about your body.
Yes.
and your brain.
It's the saxophone.
The saxophone
alto, yeah.
That's it. And I read that you talk about some sort of pivotal moment in 1997 when you discovered improvisation and set off along this voyage, taking you to where you are today. I'd love to hear a little bit more about how it all began for you.
Yeah, so actually I'm an autodidact.
Mm.
I never went to any school or conservatories. I don't know if it's good. But I started improvisation when I was 18 or 19 with master classes in Paris.
Mm-hmm.
So I only did master class with a famous improviser, and I developed my own techniques through those master class. But I don't come from a musical family at all. I grew up in Paris in a very bourgeois area, and I was in a Catholic private school. So I was not intended to be a musician at all. And I was a very shy kid, and we lived a life very isolated from the real world, like a bubble. very isolated from the real world. But since small, I was very interested by instruments. So I had private lessons with several instruments. I did guitar, I did clarinet, I did piano. And it was always an interest for me, the instruments, playing something. And when I was a teenager, growing up in this kind of environment, Catholic school, I became a kind of rebel.
Yeah.
And, you know, this typical journey of teenager through music. So I was buying a lot of CDs. And when I was 14, 15, I was obsessed by David Bowie and the 70s and all this kind of music. And I thought, wow, that's the big shit. That's the real music. I met a lot of friends, Lebanese friends that became musicians now, that are improvisers. And we discovered with this group of teenagers the different labels, record labels.
Yes.
First, we discovered ECM label.
Mm-hmm.
And like we were like 16 or something like that. So I was obsessed by Keith Jarrett, Jan Gerbarek, and those kind of musicians. But at this time I had a piano teacher, and I gave him the CD of Keith Jarrett and told him I want to play the Cult concert. You know, this is the real good thing. And he told me, "Wow, this is so bad. This Keith Jarrett is such a nerd." And he gave me another CD of Pierre Boulez, you know, and told me, "This is the big shit. This is Pierre Boulez." So I listened to the CD at home and I was like, oh, okay, this is a step beyond, you know. Yeah, that was a kind of revolution in my head. And then we discovered finally the label FMP label. So it was musicians like Peter Brodsman, Miles Gustafson, John Butcher, those kind of musicians. And at this time, we were really big fan of this music. We were going to all the festivals, camping, you know, to go everywhere. All this happened in Paris, and there was this place called Les Instants Chavirés in Paris,
right,
where there was all this masterclass, and they had at this time very pedagogical approach. So we were going there three times a week, and really fun. And for me, it was like a social issue, you know, like it was like I was discovering a secret mystery world of music. But I never thought I would be a musician, actually, at this time. I was not at all a fetishist of instrument or musical history or anything. So I was doing at the same time my university, doing history and sociology and doing the master class. And one day someone called me like, "Do you want to do a concert and you will be paid?" And I said, "Okay, no problem, I'm going to do that." And then it happened like this, actually.
And why the saxophone? I mean, to me, there are sort of cliched references, like you say, about rebellion or that it straddles different disciplines. But for the teenage Chris, what was it about the saxophone that...
I was really obsessed by saxophonists like Peter Brodsman and Miles Gustafson. At this time, I was trying to play the louder possible. You know, what was my interest was the energy and the kind of rage. And I quit the clarinet because it was very narrow and difficult. And I tried the saxophone and it was really easy for me, like an extension of my body and my voice. So the aim was to be like Peter Brodsman and play this energetic way of playing. But the more I was playing at this time, so now I was like 20, something like this, and the more I was playing and the more I got fed up with the saxophone. And then after all these FMP things, I discovered electroacoustic music. And electronic music like Eliane Radig, Alvin Lucier, and all this kind. And then it was a second revolution in my head. So I was a bit fed up of the saxophone, and I tried to find a way not to go beyond the instrument, but maybe go inside the instrument and find my own voice. I would say that it's a coincidence that I chose the saxophone. I work with it, and then I found a way to, it's a medium for me to express something very organic. But it's not a passion for saxophone, I would say, but it's an easy medium for me to express something and develop my own techniques and But still, today I have a hard time to say to myself, "You're a musician." I have, you know, this impostor syndrome that a lot of women have, and I'm still, still now, I'm asking myself, "Wow, why I'm a musician and how it happened, actually."
Yeah, I was thinking when you talk about the male sound, and then you're talking about being a female performer. We have a topic for this year's festival, experiments and defiance. And is there a sense of defiance in the music making that you do? Is there a sense of defiance in the identity that you feel that you have?
Yeah, it's also a difficult question for me because I'm not sure I'm answering in the right way, but I will try. But first of all, I would say that being a musician for me, it's quite difficult. It's not an easy job. And it's quite taboo to complain about how it's hard to be a musician, because in front of me there is people working in an office with awful slaves jobs, and it's difficult to talk about this. And I know that it's a kind of privilege to be a musician and to be a bit free. And so I know that I'm quite lucky, but I won't say that I'm a fulfilled woman. And first of all, as I said before, I have this impostor syndrome that I'm dealing with daily, and it doesn't go away easily, and I have to deal with. So I'm not an ambitious person. I have professional ambitions, ambitious at all, and it's easy for me to forget about who I am and to fall into laziness and cynicism and depression and the lack of self-confidence. Mm-hmm. So I have to deal first of all with that, and it's quite intimate. Plus, I'm a mother, and being a musician plus a mother is a very difficult way of life. You can imagine the struggle financially, and also my husband, I'm very lucky also because my husband is also a musician and has this precarious life also, so we can manage together and with no conflict about, but it's quite difficult to organize our life, our artistic life and personal life, and plus the responsibility to being a parent and have, you know, this precarious life. Plus, you can add to all that the fatigue of traveling and the absurdity of traveling so long. Plus, I live in post, so the travel is always very hard, and it's this kind of absurdity to travel a lot to do a concert for one night in front of very few people. So you have this kind of absurdity. So I have the feeling, there is a sentence of Sarah Lucas, I don't know if you know her, that said that art is like trying to escape from a prison with a nail file. You say nail file?
Nail file.
So yeah, I have this feeling also that music for me is a bit a quest towards fragility and instability. And for me, it's a way to... Music is a way for me to digest all these difficulties. And sometimes I say to myself, no, you're doing this music and this music is nice because you have all these difficulties. But in another point of view, I said, no, this is so cliche to say to myself that I'm like a cursed artist. And I wonder what would be my music if I had all the good conditions in me, like time, all the material condition, money, time, what would be my music? There is also this issue that maybe 80% of what I do is collaborations with people I don't know. So I've been also very lucky because it's all the time it's meeting with nice people and interesting people, but I would also love to do my own projects in order to understand who I am and what I want to do and with who I want to work, you know. And it's a quest because I don't really know, actually. I don't have time to understand really what I am and what do I want in art and music. And also the world of improvisation is a bit restricted. I feel sometimes restricted, and it's a very small world with its own limits, and I would love to work with other disciplines, but it's a bit difficult. And I think it would stimulate me a lot to work with, I don't know, dance and movies and photography or literature. It will stimulate my work. And also, I found that thinking about music and talking about music sometimes is more stimulating for me than playing music. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so maybe the defiance would come from a common reflection about music and being a musician and all this community of thoughts that is lacking for me at the moment. For example, I found very difficult to talk about music in this Indian improvised scene. It's very taboo. For example, when I told you that when I was talking about shape, I've been rejected by a lot of people, like, no, we don't have to talk about shape. And it's very taboo to talk about music. And I don't, it's a pity, because for me, it's what would stimulate me and what would bring me a little bit up.
I think I need to bring you a bit more into my community. I love what you say about this quest for fragility, and also kind of the search for self-knowledge. And I understand also what you describe about sometimes if you do too much collaborative work, you lose a bit your sense of self, or lose your sense of direction.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that the defiance would come from this common community of thoughts, and how we are musicians, and what is music, and how it is related to our personal life, to get out of our own territory a bit,
yes.
And also to understand who we are and what we want, and so maybe more care, more solidarity, more talkings would help a lot in this industry. And woman-wise, I'm conscious that it's better, that there is more and more musicians, but I think it's nothing, because, for example, there is very few women that are directors of festival or institutions, all the high-level jobs, there is no woman at all. And I think that if there would be more women, there would be more initiative to all this kind of care and, yeah.
And thinking about the work that you're making at the moment, where is the energy? Where's the inspiration?
Actually, excitement doesn't happen like that for me. It's not an event or a discovery of something. For me, it's very subtle and like an insidious process, very slow.
So it's the wrong energy. It's the wrong word for you. Something cooks more slowly.
Yeah, or more... it's a slight difference, actually. Like I can find stimulation in daily life, in a part of a movie or in a sentence in a book. It's not one event or one artist or something like this. Mm-hmm. It's usually like a switch that lights up in my thoughts, or that make me think a slightly different way, you know.
The way that you talk about your work and the way that you talk about sound seems to me very, very holistic. Of course, that's not completely unusual, but coming from a very classical background myself, it's not holistic at all. The training that we have is, you know, very separated in terms of body and intellect. Is that just you, or firstly, is it fair to describe it like that? Do you think it's true?
Yeah, I think it's true, because actually I don't practice a lot. And it's more a state of mind and a state of body that I have that I can focus pretty easily. And it's like a training of my listening. I train my listening. And so I can, it's like a holistic way of being in a space and in a time. and it's a practice that I did for 20 years, but it's not my, it goes beyond my techniques, and it's more like filling the space, the time, and be focused and be in the time and in the space.
That's beautiful. Okay, to finish, I'm wondering if you can tell us a little bit about what you might be bringing to Cafe Otto to share with us. We don't want too much detail because we just want to tempt people to come along.
So I will do a solo.
Yes.
And you can expect a journey inside the saxophone in its own anatomy. So you can expect like infinite sonic possibilities through the saxophone, like concrete textures, which combine breath, silence, and countless acoustic distortions, work with frequencies and organic microsounds. And I have the feeling that with the saxophone, the machine, the instrument, and the body can merge together very easily. So I work a lot with microtonal aspects of the saxophone, air sounds and pitch breath, and to see how the body reacts with the air column. As I said before, the sax is like an extension of my body and voice and my own breath and my own air. And sometimes I have the feeling that my mouth, it's like the door of my body, and it's like a peaceful cavity, but surrounded by very complex ways. So it's not just exhaling and inspiring, but more crossing the inside and the outside, and how I need to put out all the inside that I have inside me. And also I like to play with the ear of the listener, try to disorient the listener, try to disturb the ear and create trouble in the space, in the acoustic space. And yeah.
I love this. I really want to hear it now.
Oops. Don't expect too much.
No, we expect everything you've just described. It sounds fantastic. Thank you so much for speaking with me and being so candid and so open with your thoughts. I want to encourage you a lot to try and find the spaces where you can talk about music, because you're completely interesting to listen to. There's so much complexity and beauty in the way you describe what you do. Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much.
Listeners, I hope you'll join us for Christine's performance at the Eavesdropping Festival on Friday, the 31st of March at Cafe Otto. And you can find out more about what we do by visiting www.eavesdropping.london. You have been listening to an Eavesdropping conversation. Our new jingle was composed for us by Iza Otoya.